Good morning, Bozeman. Welcome to Living Richly. I'm your host, Leslie Cunningham, and so great to be with you this morning. Living Richly is a show that occurs the first and third Sundays of every month, and today we have just a wonderful guest that I am really, really looking forward to talking to. I've invited Jim Berquist, and he is the business consultant who coached Seattle's Pike's Place Fish Market to world fame and success. And Jim is an executive coach, a meeting facilitator, and course leader for more than 20 years. And the great thing about Jim's approach is that he works from the perspective that people at their core are powerful, creative beings, and that being in business is fundamentally a creative endeavor. And so this show talks about how to apply the inner approaches to creating external success in our lives, and that's why I've invited Jim to join us here today. Jim, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Leslie. I'm glad to be with you.
Oh, I'm so glad to have you on the show. I've been looking forward to this all week, actually ever since we lined it up. So I can't wait for our listeners to experience some of your insights and your wisdom. So let's just start with, why don't you share with us the Pike's Place fish story, you know, specifically the before and after, before you started working with them, and then what changed on an internal level with the owner and the employees that created the external results for Pike's Place Fish Market?
Okay. Well, let's see. It started actually back in 1986. And I had started my consulting business a few years earlier and was always, you know, interested in new clients. And a good friend of mine introduced me to John Yokoyama. And John is the owner of the Pike Place Fish Market. And I introduced myself. I talked about consulting and tried to share with him, you know, what benefits it might be for him. But he really was not open to it. John was I don't know how to describe him. He's a pretty negative guy. He was, you know, the way he says it now, he was a no person. You know, like he would get out of bed and it was automatically no. No, I don't want to get up. No, I don't want to do the day. And then you go through the day being fairly crabby guy, you know, pretty negative guy.
Yeah, and so this is something he admits to. This is how he describes it in his books, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, he wasn't interested. So I figured, well, we're probably not going to work together. And then about a month later, he called me and asked me to come and take a look at his wholesale business. He has a retail store, but he'd gotten into the wholesale business a few months earlier. And, of course, it's a completely different kind of business than retail. And he couldn't figure out what was going on. He didn't know if he was making any money or not. So I went down and looked at his books, and I couldn't tell either. It was really a mess. So I brought in the bookkeeper, and we had the bookkeeper just crunch numbers and figure out what was really so. And turned out he had lost about $300,000 in about 3 months and didn't know it. And, oh, boy, he was really upset and scared, and he thought he'd probably have to declare bankruptcy because he couldn't pay off his creditors, mostly the vendors, suppliers, people that supplied him fish and the stuff he needed to run his business. So I suggested that maybe he didn't have to go bankrupt and that he'd been in business for about 20 years up to that point, and that maybe if he just called his people, you know, his vendors, and explained to them what was going on and asked them to carry him for a couple months until he could get caught back up. Anyway, so he did that, and they all said yes, except one guy, and he was not willing. He wanted his money, and it was a lot of money, $50,000. And it was a real problem because John had never borrowed money, and so he had no credit history. He couldn't get a loan from the bank, and it had taken everything. He'd sold all his properties and to just get caught back up to the point that he was. So anyway, finally his mother-in-law came through and loaned him $50,000. Yay for mother-in-law.
Yeah, the good old mother-in-law.
Yes, exactly.
That's awesome.
So she really saved his business. And then they rolled up their sleeves and they really went to work and they sold a lot of fish and they got caught back up. And then he said, well, he said, you helped me out in this. He said, up to this point, I actually hadn't done the kind of coaching that I normally do, because when people are in that kind of a survival situation, it's pretty hard to create. It's just, you know, pretty much nose to the grindstone and you know, get the job done. So he offered to hire me for 3 months. And if I produced, you know, through my coaching him and his crew, if I could produce an increase in productivity and profitability that would be at least equal to what I was charging, that would be great. But if I didn't, then that would be the end of the relationship. So that's how we started. And so I did my stuff. And basically what I do is I have people look at the nature of their experience of reality. So in other words, I start off by asking people this question. And the question is there anything that happens anywhere in the universe? Is there anything that happens that does not occur in your experience, your personal experience? In other words, implying that everything that happens can only show up in your world, in your personal universe. And that's a pretty big idea for most people.
Yeah, especially so, fishmongers.
Right, right. And so we had some pretty lively discussions. And at one point, one of the young guys said, well, yeah, he says, I can think of something that doesn't exist in my experience that I've never experienced but still exists. And I said, okay, what's that? He said, black holes. Black holes. And I said, okay, how do you know there are black holes? And he thought about it. He said, well, I remember seeing Carl Sagan on public television talking about the universe and the cosmos, and he, at one point, he talked about black holes. And I said, okay, well, so what you have in your experience is Carl Sagan on TV talking about black holes. The point is, I want people to start to see the reality of what's really going on, that really what their perception is and what their experience is made of is totally personal and unique to them. And we don't live that way. We live like there's, you know, this solid objective world out there independent of us, that we have no say in the matter. But really, we do. And so that's the beginning, and it's called the power of personal responsibility. It's a principle that we use in our consulting. We want people to start to discover that they really have the power to create their own experience of things.
So you're saying through this power of personal responsibility then, are you saying that whatever happens in our experience, that we are responsible for it? Is that kind of where you're taking this, or
no? Okay. No, not yet.
Okay.
No, in the beginning, it's we're asking people to take responsibility for their experience of what happens.
Gotcha.
So you know, people, something will happen, and if you have four or five people who witness this event, you'll get four or five different interpretations. Some of them will be very similar. Some of them sometimes can be really different. Each person really experiences a unique experience. And, of course, we live like, I should say it this way, that we assume that everybody sees the same world that we're seeing.
Yes. We assume that our truth is everybody's truth.
Right, exactly. Yeah. In reality, nobody sees the same world. I have two brothers, and sometime we'll get together at Christmas or Easter, and we'll be talking about our parents.
Uh-huh.
And I'll be listening to my brother talk about my dad, and I'm, whose dad is that?
Huh.
That was not my experience of dad. But it was his, and it was very, you know. So the point is, in a work situation, especially like at the fish market, you know, people would react, and this is pretty true of most workplaces. People react out of their perceptions, but they don't realize it, that they have anything to say about their perception. It looks like it's out there in the world happening to them. So then the reaction is kind of the reaction of a victim.
So can you give us an example, like a fish market story that kind of is an example of this concept? Something that,
sure,
that happened. I think that'd be helpful.
Okay, yeah. Well, let's see. Well, here's a really good one. John's younger brother, his name is Dickie. Dickie was an assistant manager. And there was a point where the manager, his name was JP, John Peterson, and he was retiring. He'd been there for 27 years, and that was kind of a upset for the owner because he was a great manager, and of course the concern was, well, who's going to run my store? And JP's response was, well, your brother, Dickie. And John was totally upset by that. I can't let my brother run the store. He put it out, put me out of business. And so then at one point he asked me who I thought would be a good manager, and I agreed with JP. I said, I think Dickie's the guy to take over.
Much to his chagrin.
Oh, boy. He said, you guys are crazy. He said, I can't let my little brother. Well, so now I said, John, that's our experience of your brother, is that he would make a great manager. And your experience is that he wouldn't. So I'm curious to know, is what's your perception of your little brother? And he says, well, he's my stupid little brother. Oh, well, where does that come from? Well, he started smoking when he was 14, and he wrecked my dad's car, and he took off with his high school buddies and drove to California without telling anybody when he was 16. And he had this whole list of things that his brother had done and for which he had judged him as stupid.
Uh-huh.
And that was his perception. Now, you have to understand, at this point, he was probably, 55, 56 years old, and Dickie is 3 years younger. So this, you know, this had been going on for a long time. So I presented this possibility that, John, you know, perhaps your perception isn't the same as what's real. It isn't that I'm asking you to lie about your experience, because I know that's how you're experiencing it, but the source of your experience is your own interpretations. Would you be willing to consider that? And so he's a pretty coachable guy.
Uh-huh.
He's a good learner. Anyway, so he took it on, and he said, okay, I can see theoretically, but I don't feel it. I still feel like my brother's stupid. Oh, and I should mention this, too, that every time John would show up at the market, Dickie would fall apart. And he would do stupid things when John was around.
Of course.
Pretty interesting.
Yeah.
So John made a declaration, and he declared, he said, okay, I'm going to declare that my little brother is the best manager Pike Place Fish has ever had.
Now, did he believe that, or was he just like, was it more of a willingness to believe?
Exactly.
Yeah.
He didn't feel it. He didn't believe it, but what he was doing was claiming his power to create his own experience.
Gotcha.
And sometimes when you first begin to do that, it doesn't just pop right out right away. Sometimes you kind of have to fake it till you make it, that phrase. So he made this declaration, and so he made Dickie the manager. And, oh, boy, the results went down.
Huh.
And, of course, we allowed for that because he's a learning curve. You know, he's learning to be the manager, the general manager. But after about a month and a half, it just was not happening. And so normally you would go want to go talk to Dickie. And actually, I was coaching Dickie, but it was really clear that it was John. John's the owner of the store. And there's an, oh, I don't know how to say this very well. Let's see. The owner creates the culture. They really do. They have so much, they have enormous power. And depending on their attitude and their point of view, it really shapes the work environment for everybody else. So I coached John, and I said, John, you know, you said that you were going to create Dickie being the mess manager my place fish ever had. And look at what's happening with the results. And he said, well, I tried it, and it didn't work.
Right, like many of us do in our own lives, right? We do the same thing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
He said, he is stupid. And I said, okay, but can you see that you didn't really commit because it didn't shift? In other words, the way we play our coaching game, the way you can tell what your real intentions are by what happens.
Interesting, yeah.
So, and he's willing to play that way. So he said, oh, okay. He said, I admit I didn't really fully commit. I was just trying it to see if it would work, but I didn't really change myself at a deep level. And he says, and I am willing to do that. So this time, at a staff meeting in front of everybody, all his crew, he turned to his brother, and he said, Dickie, I have to apologize to you. He said, I've been creating you, in my experience, as my stupid little brother for most of your life. And I want to take responsibility for that and declare that you're not stupid. And then he turned to the group. In fact, he says, I'm declaring that my brother is the best manager Pike Place Fish has ever had. And Dickie, there were tears in Dickie's eyes. It was a very, very moving moment. And John was really committing himself. So here's what happened. that was in April.
That sounds so. That sounds like a really powerful moment.
Oh,
you know,
what?
To publicly do that in front of everybody, right? All the employees.
Yes.
Yeah. Wow.
So April, they broke all records for all time. It was really unusual. I mean, they usually the largest month of the year is December, Christmas time. They beat December in April. April is usually a pretty slow month. And then May beat April, and then June beat May. They were breaking records every month. It was unbelievable.
Oh, my gosh.
And you know, gee, what happened? Well, what happened was what showed up at the market was the best manager Pike Place Fish ever had. And it was so. I mean, it was amazing to see the power of language and the power of what we call getting off it. In other words, John getting off his position about his brother just opened up this huge space of creativity and power, and the whole crew was able to express themselves in a new way out of the space that John created.
That is so phenomenal.
Yeah, that would be an example of taking responsibility for your own perceptions, your own experience.
That's a wonderful example, because for many of us, we can play with that concept and accept that, okay, I do create my experience. I can understand that. And then to change that, we could see how possibly maybe the person like that we're having the issue with could change. I mean, we can relate to that. We can see that that's possible. But then I think what's amazing about the story that you're sharing is how this public declaration and really his getting behind his commitment, that not only changed his brother, but it changed how everybody was working at the fish market with his brother. It transformed the whole culture.
Exactly. Exactly.
So that's really phenomenal when you think about the ripple effect of our own willingness to commit to a certain experience.
Right.
Yeah. Wow. So after that, then the market started turning and transforming. And in your articles and on your website, I should also have you mention your website to our listeners if they want to go to it and check it out. What is that website address, Jim?
Yeah, it's www.bizfutures.com. Bizfutures with a Z and an S at the end.
Okay, great. I noticed on your website you talk about the difference between motivation and inspiration. What
right.
is the difference? And we just have, what, a minute or two before we go to a station break. But,
okay.
Yeah, so...
Real quickly, motivation has to do with things external, out in the world. So, you know, if we wanted to give you an incentive, you know, we might offer you a bonus. Or then there's negative motivation, too. You know, what happens if you don't do it? You know, the bad side, the negative side. Inspiration comes from the inside. It's it has to do with when you are expressing your true purpose in life. And it feels real good, and you're really effective, and things turn out pretty effortlessly. And it's a natural kind of expression of who you are. Does that communicate?
Yes, it does. As opposed to being motivated from outward circumstances, you're motivated internally, basically. Well, I'm still using the word motivation.
Right.
That's probably not good.
No, well, that's...
But it's coming from within.
Yeah, motive has to do with motion, you know. So, yes, you're taking action, but sometimes the action is from the outside, and sometimes the action is coming from inside you. And when your brilliance shows up, in other words, when you produce a great performance, it's because of that insight somehow was able to express itself.
Great. So we are going to be going to a station break. We are talking with Jim Berquist. He is the business consultant who coached Seattle's Pike's Place Fish Market to world fame and success. And when we come back from our break, he will talk about some more of these inner principles that he used to work with Pike's Place and the fishmongers. So please stay tuned. You're listening to Living Richly, and we'll be right back after this station break. Good morning. Welcome back to Living Richly, the show that talks about the art of achieving inner and outer wealth on the first and third Sundays of the month from 10 a.m. till 11 a.m. I'm your host, Leslie Cunningham, and today we are talking with Jim Berquist, the business consultant who coached Seattle's Pike's Place Fish Market to world fame and success. And I should also mention to our listeners that Jim has agreed to do a part two of the show on December 7th. That's actually the first Sunday in December. So Jim will be joining us again on December 7th from 10 a.m. till 11 a.m. So thank you for agreeing to do that, Jim.
Oh, my pleasure.
I appreciate it. And I was laughing. I was talking to Mike here during our break, and I was saying, well, we've gotten through two questions out of 19 on my list. So this is wonderful that you'll be joining us again. So how we ended before the station break with talking about the difference between motivation and inspiration. So
yes.
Let's talk more about these principles that you applied to the market. And I think also, I'm thinking now, before we get into that, let's just pause a minute and tell us what are the things about Pike's Place Fish Market? We're assuming that our listeners know about it, but some listeners don't. So what stands out about Pike's Place Fish Market? And maybe just briefly share some of the amazing things that have happened at the marketplace that has brought it to world fame.
Okay. Well, let's see. They're now considered the major icon in Seattle for tourism. So people come from all over the world to see these guys, and a lot of people just stand in front of the shop and watch. But a lot of people buy fish, and they have great seafood. Actually, they have the best seafood in the world, and that's part of their commitment to being world famous. But also they have a special way of being with people, and I really mean that the way I said it. They actually be with people, and you know, we've trained them with a series of communication exercises so that they're able to be very effective in their ability to communicate with people at a pretty deep level. So, I mean, sure, they say hi to people and they're interested in people, but they're really out to make a difference for people. You know, this happened at one of our meetings. They said they wanted to be world-famous fishmongers. And actually, I should back up a little bit. You know, initially, the second principle that we use is called creating the future, or creating the future from the future. And a lot of times,